This is Judy Rubenstein and Gabby Dinman interviewing Donald Butler on July 22nd, 1993. Before we began the interview, Donald wanted to show us something special.
This is a incunabulus, something that's published before 1500. This is a tour on the Toshel Mishpat, which is a book of Jewish law that was published in Krakow in 1566. This was given to me by Dr. Friedel, and he inscribed it in Hebrew here. The feelings of love and friendship, Makana, a gift of God in honor of, and this is my name, Now, this was, this book, you have to understand how these things were printed. Today, we print, we take a picture of everything, you know, a photo offset.
Mm-hmm.
This is done, each letter was an individual piece of metal. See, this it wasn't just put together. There was nothing to photograph it from. This is an original, and that's why the editors of and the printers of Jewish books, Talmud, Gemara, the Bible, and so forth, had to be scholars themselves, because they had to know the proper what they were doing was right. So this is a these letters are individual pieces of metal, and it may have taken years to print this because they didn't have that much type. There was no linotype like we have today. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to show you. Every letter was a separate piece. Mm-hmm. I had a very warm friendship with Dr. Friedhoff for many years. As a matter of fact, I was with him 2 days before he died in the hospital. But he had a tremendous library, and this was one of the things he gave him. I also have a collection of about 400 Sigurim prayer books that he started me on. I have them here. It's not a fancy collection, but it's every one is different. Every prayer book is different. That's the different traditions of. I have some in Ladino, I have in French and German and Italian, they're all different. And oddly enough, it's interesting for you to know that when I daven in the morning at home, I use a different every day. Just to keep them keep them alive, and he started me on the collection. And I have about 400 pieces. So,
do you obviously daven in Hebrew, but
yeah,
do
sure.
you utilize any of the other languages? Any?
No. I speak French and I know a little Italian, but I can every once in a while look at it, but it's just. It's a very interesting hobby. I just started. He got me started on it. He said it to me a long time ago, a number of years ago, that many people collect different. Some people collect haggadahs. Some people collect different Jewish memorabilia. But he said very few people collect siddurim. So he says, "Well, it's just so." He, as a matter of fact, he rebound a number of them for me because that was his avocation. He was electrical binding, and he redid a number of them. And I learned one thing very interesting, and this reflects on what we're talking about too. I learned that you always have to tell the truth. And I'll give you a quick anecdote. I have a canned talk that I give about this today. Different groups, and I was invited to the temple. They have a men's senior retired men's thing on Thursdays, and so I was invited to come there to talk. Heinrich Richmond asked me to come to talk about I called it the Jewish bestseller, the Siddur, because it probably has sold more volume, more copies than anything in the world. At any rate, and I bring along, maybe 15 of them, and I discuss the different traditions. For example, there's a morning prayer that say before you begin to daven. There's a prayer that talks about Havah Shalom Eladon Chavera, bringing peace between man and fellow man. But there is one tradition that says that between man and his fellow man, that Ish l'Ishto, and man for his wife. Very interesting. So anyway, I talk about the different things. But I have a sitter during the war in North Africa. There was a chaplain, my name was Louis Werfel. Lou Werfel was killed in Algeria, just outside of Oran. He was stationed in Casablanca. And as a matter of fact, I and another fellow were buried in the Oran Cemetery. He crashed into, he was flying back to his base, and he crashed into what was known as Lion Mountain. Monte Leon. So, and that was just not very far from where we were stationed. Usually at a meeting the morning before. That morning, that is. So, at the end of the war, the Jewish Welfare Board published, he was very, very helpful to French soldiers. They published a little booklet, a little sitter, for French soldiers. This booklet was published. This little, in the American Army, we had the Jewish Welfare Board supplied the Sigurim for all of the soldiers, and the French had none. So this book was published in New York by the Jewish Welfare Board in Hebrew and in French, all in French. And it says here, here are the French reader. La mémoire de Rabbin Louis Werfel, aumônier, which means chaplain,
American Army.
The Armée Américaine, tombé en champ d'honneur en terre française. He died. They refer to this champ d'honneur, a field of honor, on French soil. So this was published in 1944 by the National Jewish Welfare Board. Well, when I talked about this, I showed this sitter, and I told the story, just as I'm telling it to you. After it was over, a fellow comes up to me and says, Don, he says, I was there. I was stationed not far from Canastel, I was stationed in Canastel. He said he was stationed not far from Canastel, near Mont Leon, and he was there he remembers they found his film. So, you know, some of these things lend themselves to being anecdotal, he says, and it's exactly as you told it. So I felt good. You know? Sometimes you're prone and over the years you add things, you know. Right. He says that's exactly how it happened. Do you remember how it happened?
Is there anyone that has as extensive a collection of Siddurim?
Sure. Yes. I don't know about Siddurim. I don't know. Oh. I don't even have an inventory of them. Somebody said, do you have any insurance? I said, no, I don't even know what I have. But I have, later you can take a look and see.
Do you have any other kinds of things that would be, I'm sure you have many rare.
Not rare, but that, uh-huh. You see those, that's the tractates of the Talmud.
Uh-huh.
It's all the one of the Talmud. That belonged to Hansi's father. To my father-in-law, that was Shalom. That was the last of the Gemaras that were printed in Poland, in Vilna.
When were they printed?
1926, I think, 26 or 27.
And Hansi's father's name was?
Moshe Bard.
Bard, B-A-R-D.
Yeah, they lived in Boston. But that was, that belonged to him, and he gave it to me. He gave it to me before he passed. story. But those are the copies that the Gemaras we use now are copied from. Mm-hmm. In other words, they were simply photographed. But those are the original. That's a leather bound, and I have nothing rare. I mean, but just I have a lot more.
Tell us a few.
I have Russian and Sidurian and Gemaras and Mishnayos. There's the Encyclopedia Judaica up there, that's kind of like that. That's a biblical encyclopedia.
You don't have to go to the library like I do.
I still go to the library. I have all of most of the Cincinnati stuff that's published. I don't get a chance to look at it, unfortunately, as much as I would like to. Because we work hard now.
We wanted to go back to talk about your family more, because we covered so much of your life and the war years especially. Oh, just one question we had as we reviewed the notes before. You were in the Rosalia home?
I was born in the Foundling Asylum. It was St. Rosalia's.
Why?
It was a maternity area.
Oh, it wasn't for orphans now.
It may very well have been. I don't know. But that was where, that's what they tell me. That's where I was born.
Okay.
Because the family lived down there near where the Iron Mountain Settlement was. Mm-hmm.
Which is now the Hill District.
I don't remember that area too much, because we, after I was about, we moved out to, we lived at the corner of McNeil and Webster, McNeil Place and Webster.
Mm-hmm.
And that was where I was bar mitzvah from that house, and that was what I remember was vividly. We had Don McNeil owned that piece of property. Don McNeil was one of the city engineers. That was a private street. We had a private tennis court, croquet court, volleyball court, and I remember for years playing tennis for 3-4 hours a day. We were allowed to play all day long. As kids, we were allowed to play as long as we would stop about 2 o'clock to wet the court, because it was a clay court.
Mm-hmm.
To wet the court down and to line it, to roll it and line it, because the men would come from work at 4 o'clock, mm-hmm. and they would want to play. So we were allowed to play all morning and then.
But it belonged to the city.
No. It belonged to Don McNeil.
Oh.
It was his
and
own.
Who was this Don?
Don McNeil was a traffic engineer for the city of Pittsburgh for many, many years.
Mm-hmm. But I'm not a real Pittsburgh. So I have to ask him.
But it was, and I developed a pretty decent game, and I still play tennis.
Yeah.
When I get a chance to, we were in Long Beach last week, I played tennis. I'll get a chance to do it that much. But, that was a glorious time. And then, of course, during the summer is when we played mostly, but I went to the Hebrew Institute at that time, and we would go 10 o'clock in the morning till 12, 1 o'clock. And then normally we'd be able to play a few hours. It was great.
I think we have a lot of that on the fact that one place where there was a hole. I listened to everything.
You did?
I don't know.
Oh,
no, I do.
Boring.
Okay. Well, let me. You mentioned Pitt, but not a lot.
No, I didn't.
What did you say?
I just went to university for about a year. I didn't complete. I went. I started to work, and I was there at night for a while, and then I left it.
The other thing I
Someday I'll finish it.
Why not? It's plenty of time. How did you get into the public relations business?
Well, I'm really not in public relations. My area of activity has been over the years in theater.
Okay, right. But early on, you were connecting people.
Yes. My brother, Abraham, was the one who was working with the publishers of the Playbill in the theater. At that time, there were three theaters in Pittsburgh. There was the Nixon, there was the Alvin, and there was the Pitt Theater. Pitt Theater was a repertory theater. George Sharp Players used to play there. Repertory used to do a show for a whole week and do another show. But the Nixon always had traveling shows, I mean, you may remember or may know, for many, many years. The old Nixon was at the corner of 6th Avenue and, where the Alcoa building is now, right opposite the William Penn. And, as a matter of fact, I have the original locks in that theater, and they tore it down. And I remember showing Harold Cohen, the critic, I showed him once the diagram of the theater. When my brother was, see, at that time it was a very difficult thing to get a job without working on Shabbos.
What years were we talking about?
Well, Abraham started, I would say, in the middle 30s.
Mm-hmm.
My brother started, and afterwards, when I finished high school, I went to Olive High School. High school, as we had moved out here many years before. And I started to help to work there. Before doing that, though, I taught Hebrew in Braddock at the Jewish Center there. And then the following year, I taught Hebrew. The rabbi in New Kensington had left. And they needed a teacher. And I used to go out there every day on the Harmony Short Line. And you know what they paid me?
Huh.
$80 a month.
And well, it's during the Depression, it was a lot of money.
It was in the 40s.
Oh, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was in the 40s.
And how often did you go?
Every day.
Oh, every day?
Every day. 4 days a week. And then and there was a curious anecdote. There was a, you know, Jack Brill, who owns it, he owned the jewelry store in Shady Side.
Oh yes, he did.
His father was the treasurer of the shul in Kansas. And I have a letter, I dig it up. At the end of June, they sent me a check for $40 and said they hoped by Rosh Hashanah they'd be able to send me the other $40, which they did. So you can have an idea. And then I went to, after that, then in McKeesport, when Rabbi Kaplan left there, I think. Before Rabbi Nolman came there, before Rabbi Schick came there, I taught Hebrew there for a whole year. They paid me $100 a month.
Wow.
And then
was
I...
Was this at the Gemilla's test?
Well, no, it was they had the Jewish Center, but they had the Hebrew Institute then. You know where Sarah lives?
Sure, right across the street.
The Hebrew Institute was right near there.
Wow.
And I used to go there every day. Mm-hmm. I used to go by train. I would leave downtown, take that train to Keysport. And they paid me $100 a month. And then later I ran the Sunday school for a couple of years. Which financed my first trip to Israel. That was my first trip to Israel. So it was a very interesting experience.
When you came back from the army, did, I guess you met Hansi at that time?
No, I had, met Hansi long before.
Oh, all right, you'll have to tell us about that. But did you not go back to school first because you couldn't afford it and
went right to work. Uh-huh. Yeah, I went right to do what one work I've ever done. And interestingly enough, this is a sideline, I don't have one Jewish account.
You're kidding.
I know all these people, grew up with a lot of these people, were happy on a first name basis, involved in the Federation and other enterprises. Most people don't even know, some to this day don't even know what I do. They think I sit in shul all day long. But I don't have, all my business is 100% with my Jews. Curiously enough. But it's a very interesting, I'm very fortunate. I'm in a fascinating business. Very interesting, very stimulating. There's new people all the time. I have two things running through my blood I can't work out, I guess. One is theater and the other is printer's ink. Because that's all I've ever done. And of course it's all changed now. There's no more legitimate theater here. There are no theaters downtown. There were five theaters downtown. There isn't one now. And see, you can't fight public money. And that, by that I mean when Nixon and we were at the theater, and Dave Rubin was involved at that time. And when we needed more money, banks said, we can't give any more money. So the theater's a parking lot now. Whereas Heinz Hall, the Benetton, which is federally funded with public money, and they need money to come to you and from the 500,000 corporations. So that the whole industry has changed. And that's why if you look at the theater program, the concert programs, you'll find Westinghouse with a couple of pages, PPG, Perot, U.S. Steel, that's all fundraising money. So that it's a good way to keep it. You see, Pittsburgh has been sold on the idea there must be culture. And for the sake of that, the corporation has gone through. And that's why you have what you have. But you only have a few shows a year, and frankly, they're pricing themselves out of the market before you sit down.
And with the Phantom,
And when we brought Manny La Mancha here a number of years ago, I don't know if you were here at that time. They were going to play 6 weeks here, and the fellows came down from New York even before they set it up, and they said they were going to charge $20 a seat. I said, you guys are out of your mind. We played Hello Dolly with Carol Channing at $11 top or $12 top. I said, you can't get that kind of money. We'll do it. I didn't intend it. It wasn't my position to. As I said, it's we're getting it in Toronto, we're getting it all over. And they came in and they pumped about $2.4 million into this economy. And everybody came to see Manny La Mancha. Same thing is happening with Phantom now. And they're trying to put there. But before you sit down in two seats, it's going to cost you $100. Plus
New York.
Babies here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I mean, Pittsburgh isn't geared for it. That's why they have a few shows a year. And it's very successful.
Mm-hmm.
But from my end of the business, I mean, it doesn't. It's not viable.
So this week in Pittsburgh is mostly the hotels?
No, it's all over the city. We have readers all over Pittsburgh. It's the only weekly magazine left in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. And it's just rounding out its 62nd year.
Mm-hmm.
62 years. And we've missed a few Fridays, but that's about all.
How many do you publish a week?
Well, it depends. That depends on the site. We cover conventions, for example. I mentioned to you earlier this education convention where they get copies to put into their kits.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very specialized kind of coverage. We've had, unfortunately, can't depend too much on Pittsburgh Advertiser because restaurants are notoriously bad pay. This is, I'm not telling any stories out of school. as the experience. And it's a hard pull to get somebody to spend $15, $20 or $50 for an ad, and you have to wait 6 months or more to get it. And some of the finest restaurants, we take clients. Clients is now a parking lot. We carry clients advertising for 40 years. But they gave up. And that's unfortunately, downtown has changed a lot. But it's still a fascinating business. I talk to people in the business. And it's a very interesting adventure. Very happy with it.
How does it compare with similar periodic growth in other cities?
Well, Walter West, who owns this group in Chicago, and I were the ones who founded what is known as a Key magazine across the country, Key magazine. Most of them are tourist magazines. I don't take the massage parlors or the porno movies or any of those, never do. And many of them around the country are the kind of thing that the traveler wants. We've concentrated more on a civic level, and we tie in with important conventions that come to Pittsburgh, the International Mining Congress, the International Bridge Conference that was held here. We have the American Banking Association, the American Bar Association, so many. Every week something different. And
Steel.
That's going to be in September. The Iron and Steel Exposition. And every week there's something else that I sometimes get two or three people wanting my tough cover and full treatment. I just did something for the Catholic Deaf. Well, the Catholic Deaf had a conference here in Pittsburgh, a national conference, all deaf people. And I devoted the entire issue to that. And even carried advertising for deaf people. Like TTY and outfit like Van Camp and Merritt. It's always they have a special division for deaf people. Deaf people have money. I've become an expert in trivia in some of these things because there are so many different. Now, for example, we had a conference here for disabled, what do they call it?
Physically challenged.
That's a new terminology. But what do they call it? Used to call it children, now they call it citizens. Early retired. I don't know, anyway. So I developed the whole issue of that, and oddly enough, there's a tremendous field of industry in that
rehabilitation.
And not only rehabilitation, but to help people who are retired and who are physically challenged. Just next week, there's going to be a conference here, a dinner for the I forget the exact title of it, but the idea is to help people who are physically challenged, who have to need help. Like, for example, it's fixing the sidewalk so that they can come up in the wheelchairs. And this is going to be held here at the Vistock. But this coming week. I get 30, 40 pieces of mail a day. Maybe imagine an enterprise that wants publicity. That's really the only, I shouldn't say the only the magazine, but the only general type magazine. And we try to highlight those things that the newspapers can touch.
Now, you haven't told us anything about your children. How many
before we go back to Hunty first, and you briefly discussed the meeting. Okay, would you tell us a little bit more?
Oh, you mean
about
how we met?
Right, yes, and her family.
Her family. Hunty is a great great-granddaughter, Shmuel Salanter, who was the first chief rabbi of Yerushalayim. And I have to give you a little...
He was the chief rabbi when?
Of Jerusalem. This goes back two generations. He was the chief rabbi for 70 years. He died in the 90s. He, curiously enough, when we were in Israel the last time before this, and we both speak Hebrew, and so we were very comfortable. We went on a walking tour, and we came up to showed where the old Torah Shul was, it was sacked by the Jordanians. And it's not Joe Katz, Pittsburgh, gave the money to rebuild a lot of that. And I met Joe. So we stopped for a drink.